Coming up on today's Central Standard, a look at parenting. What does it mean to be a parent? Do you ever get to stop being a parent? Or is the saying true, once a parent, always a parent? I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, our regular guest, Dr. Bruce Leese, will be joining us for a conversation about what it means to be a parent. Plus, moms and dads, we want to hear about your experiences. What's the best and worst thing about the job of parenting? That discussion is ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Parenting can be a privilege. Parenting is rewarding. It requires patience and sacrifice. There is no recipe. There are no two parents, in fact, who are alike. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Joining us once again is Dr. Bruce Leese, professor of family medicine at KU, who is here to talk about parenting tools you can use, what we learn from our parents, what we learn as parents, what we learn from our parents' parents. And we'd like you to call in and talk about parenting as we do. Now to Dr. Bruce Leese. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Good morning. It's great to be here. This is my favorite topic to teach, actually.
Now, along those lines, what does it mean to be a parent?
Oh, it's complex.
A bit.
The list is long, but I like to boil it down to four things. To be a good parent, requires that you understand the process of development of children, where your child should be approximately before 18 months old, after 18 months old, before adolescence, during adolescence. So developmental perspective is one. Good parents nurture their children well. They love them well. They have lots of affection and validation. But number three is they also are capable of discipline, of setting rules, boundaries, and having consequences when rules are broken. And then a good parent understands family dynamics and understands when a problem in a child is a result of family dynamics. So that's a boil down of the long list.
Dr. Leese, once a parent, always a parent. Do you ever stop being a parent?
Well, my daughter is 24 years old, and it's just different. It's just different than it was when she was other ages. It's awesome and terrific and wonderful. So it ain't going to stop for me. I know that.
That's why it's key to talk about the different stages of development, as we will in this hour. For you, Dr. Leese, what's the best and worst thing about being a parent? Can you be honest with us before we get into the specifics?
Oh,
what
yeah.
are the best and worst things for you about being a parent?
You know, the list of things that are great is so long that I'll just stick with current parenting things. I got to be with my daughter and run 3 miles with her when she was here for the Thanksgiving break. It was just amazing being with a young woman who's been such a central part of my life and talking to her about everything like an adult. That was cool. And certainly the worst thing for me was when she was an adolescent and I could do no right. Nothing I did was right. You know, I couldn't chew food right. I couldn't drive right. I couldn't do anything right. And I hope I learned from those times.
My uncle told me when my first son was born, me and my first son spent Thanksgiving planes, trains, and automobiles from here to Chicago and just going all around town like rock stars and having some adventures. But my uncle told me, when your child is young, they think you're a hero. When they're in middle adolescence, as you said, Dr. Bruce Leese, you can do no right. And when they're in adulthood, they remember that some of what you said was right.
That's a nice feeling.
And given that, there's a lot of parents out here that we see in the news that are doing heinous things, that are doing you know, morally reprehensible things in other people's eyes. Some parents are doing the best they can. Should everybody, Dr. Bruce Lees, become a parent?
No. Next question. No. I have often worked with people who really shouldn't have become parents. It not only ruined the child's life that they were their parent, but it ruined their lives. They were not ready for the incredible responsibility and the challenges and the hard work and the knowledge and wisdom that's required for doing good work as a parent.
Nin KC wrote in already to say we already have listeners writing in and participating. Nin KC wrote us to say the worst thing about being a parent is watching your child with a broken heart. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think that'll be a lot of what we talk about today. Tolerating your child's discomfort and pain is one of the most important skills you can learn as a parent. As a parent, it's our responsibility to teach our kids how to live, how to love, how to find meaning in life. And they're going to have to skin their knees a lot. I'm going to probably mention frequently that there's a great article in the magazine, The Atlantic Monthly, on it's called How to Land Your Child in Therapy, and the whole premise of that article, and there's good references to research that's been done in that article. So, you know, that article says if you don't learn how to watch your child's heart be broken and let them work through it, they will need intensive therapy to figure out why they're not making it in the world when their heart is broken.
Right, and vis-a-vis that, you talk about nurturing and affection and structure and discipline and having a balance of both. Could you expound a little bit on that?
I would be happy to. I like to think of parenting as having two major parts. Part one is discipline, structure, consequences, the tough stuff. That's part one. Part two is nurturing, affection, love, validation. If you have too much of either of those, not well balanced by the other, your kid or kids will have problems. And I can talk more about the specifics later, or I can talk about them now.
So with that in mind, is it possible to love your child too much?
I'll talk about it now. Thank you. That's a good
talk about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Children, again, they require discipline and consequences and structure. And if they don't get enough of that, they themselves will have difficulty finding direction in the world. Getting direction and having the self-discipline to pursue what they want and what they need in life. Similarly, if they don't get enough affection, so that's discipline. If they don't get enough affection, they won't know how to love others. They'll be lonely. They'll be cold-hearted. So you can't love your kids too much. It's impossible to love too much. You can over-accommodate them.
Or overindulge them.
Thank you. Great word. They can overindulge them. They can really cause problems by giving a disproportionate amount of affection to structure. So a child who is spoiled probably got too much affection and not enough structure. A child who is lost probably didn't get enough affection or structure. A child who is very compulsive or angry probably got too much structure and not enough affection. So that leaves one category left, and that's the great kid who gets an appropriate amount of both.
What about the juxtaposition of different parenting sensibilities where one parent offers absolutely no structure and the other parent offers doting, nurturing affection? And I'm not ashamed to say that this was my upbringing. So what about that, I would almost say, bipolar juxtaposition of no supervision, you know, something bordering on neglect almost, and then maybe too much coddling?
Consistency between caregivers, and I intentionally use the word caregivers because in today's family life, it might be a grandparent and a parent. It could be any combination of people who are responsible for raising a child. If there's inconsistency between caregivers towards a child, it will be confusing. But children look to get what they want and need in life. And one of the ways they do it with multiple caregivers is they try to figure out how to squeeze between them. They try to figure out which one will give them what they want. So you're doing children a big disservice. It's an injustice to have parents who aren't on the same page with parenting.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR.org. Dr. Bruce Lees, professor of family medicine at KU, is here to talk about parenting, tools you can use, what we learn from our parents and our parents' parents. And we'd like you to call in and talk about parenting. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Kansas City, we're talking about parenting and asking you, can you love your children too much? Do you spoil them too much? Do you think spoiled children turn out to be bad people necessarily, or landing your children in therapy, as Dr. Bruce Lees talks about? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also Facebook us. You can also hit us off at centralstandard@kcur.org or at KCURCST. That's our Twitter handle. Nancy writes us to say, as a school nurse, I can verify smothering your children and trying to keep them from sad or bad cripples them. That's what Nancy says. They become incapable of handling the simplest situations on their own. They are incapable of thinking a situation through. Our guest is Dr. Bruce Lees. As I mentioned, what do you think of that? Then? They become incapable of handling the simplest of situations.
I'm the advisor to the KU sailing team, sailing club. And even in adult children, kids who are at college, whose parents don't let them suffer the consequences of their misbehavior. I see it in, 18, 19, 20-year-olds. If they're in trouble and their parents try to swoop in and rescue them in some way, they never learn. And they're the ones that tend to have the most difficulty with their peers. They tend to have a lot of difficulties. Even in children who are chronologically adults, if their parents don't let them fall and skin their knees and figure out what they're going to do with their pain, they're doing them a disservice.
Jennifer in Mission writes about writer-director Nora Ephron, who said that successful parenting means raising a child who, as an adult, makes enough money to afford their own therapy. What do you think about that, Dr. Bruce Lees?
it's amazing how many people do need some kind of re-parenting experience. And I don't like that term. It sounds like too much of jargon, but therapy is for adults and children who didn't get these kinds of experiences that we're talking about here, a balance between discipline and nurturing. And when people can afford to get help, that's great. If they can't, it's important for healthcare providers, friends, clergy to help them find the help they need.
Dr. Lees, we recently saw the phenomenon of Black Friday, and the statistics bear it out. It was highly successful from a statistical standpoint. You could see the anecdotal evidence if you were out and about, parents and children with bags, husbands with purses sitting down quietly, children jumping up and down in the aisles. I had my own child at my side up in Chicago on Michigan Avenue pulling at my sleeve, asking for things. Talk about the drawback of child-centered parenting, where the child appears to run the agenda of the larger family instead of the other way around.
Very destructive. People don't realize, parents don't realize, caregivers don't realize what a burden it is on a child to get so much attention at home and so much accommodating. They don't understand how that does cripple children for later in life. The love should be spread equally throughout and across family members. So should the discipline. With two spouses, if one of them is doing something wrong, the other spouse should be strong and stand up to them. And so everyone in a family benefits when people are treated equally and with structure and expectations.
What about the united front? A mother will often tell a dad, take it easy on him. Dad will tell a mother, come on, take it easy.
Absolutely.
What about a united front with parenting?
It goes both ways. At the core of parenting is executing your value systems. So if my value system is very materialistic, then I will think that showing my love involves buying lots of gifts and stuff like that. So why did I say that? I said that because not only do you have to agree, but you have to come to terms with differences in your own value systems. Do you value a child that is polite and who is warm and caring? Some parents want their kids to just be sweet, fun, and playful. Other parents want their kids to be highly disciplined. They offer to take out the trash, remove the dishes from the dishwasher. You got to come to terms with value system differences in any family raising children.
We're on with Dr. Bruce Leese. We're talking about parenting, spoiling your children versus disciplining your children. We're going to go to Mary, who's on the phone lines in KC right now. Mary, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. Yes, it's what a great day for this conversation.
It sounds like you're going through it. Talk to me.
Well, actually, I just have a passion for this whole subject matter, and that is the focus of what I will try to do in the community for the rest of my life now that I've had this revelation about and seeing where we are as a world and in our community with regard to, at the aftermath. I think we're really suffering with the aftermath of the lack of knowledge and understanding the importance of, in the investment, in investing in our children. Instead of things, and with the gentleman with the value system of valuing a child, I would like to say that I believe that it's important for a child to be valued, to feel valued, and not connect what they do to who they are. And know that they are always valued, even when they do wrong things, but not connect their identity to what they do. And just that word grace and knowing that they always have your acceptance and that you're valued no matter what you do in the discipline, because it is important. But one of the things that I would like to focus my thoughts to and where my work lies is the whole issue of back to the table.
Back to the table. Can you pare that down for us and let Dr. Bruce Leese expound on it or respond to it?
Yeah. Well,
back to the table. What does that mean?
Well, that is the work I do, am doing and trying to initiate an initiative of that. With the research that I've done and knowing that the quality time, not quantity, but spending time with a child dining and being consistent with it, of dining at the table and just coming to the table and sitting there with your child and with an open heart, and that way you're able to really listen to them, know what they're going through, and offer your advice or whatever. That the importance of just consistently dining at the table with your children.
Okay, Mary, we're going to let Dr. Bruce Leese expound on that and explain. Thank you for your thoughts.
Yeah, back to the table. That's a nice phrase. What it reminds me of is that the most powerful process of learning for children is watching their parents. Children are amazingly astute observers. They see everything you do and everything you don't do. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So when you're at the table, your requests, your demands, your parenting needs to be consistent with the way you really act. So if you're at the table and you just sat down and a politician is on the radio or TV and you start saying very nasty things about the politician, and then you find out that your kid has said nasty things about a teacher in school and you say you're not allowed to do that, it doesn't matter that you both sat at the table, but you were a hypocrite at the table. You were nasty, and your child isn't allowed to be nasty.
And that's an interesting thing that you bring up. Back to the table is one thing, but what you do at the table is another.
Good.
I was on the train headed up north to Chicago in the observation car where you're allowed to sit at the table and look out at the countryside. Very beautiful experience. However, I observed a family of four sitting at a table, as we're talking about right now. They all had either PDA or handheld devices or magazines. There was no conversation. The wife had a PDA. The dad had some type of PDA or phone. The kid had a game system. total silence. Now, I'm not one to judge. That's what they do. But expound on that. You can come at the table and say absolutely nothing.
I really do worry about, and I'm very technologically savvy. I've been teased about having multiple smartphones, and I do, you know, I do all kinds of technical stuff. But I really do worry about the amount of attention that is paid to the world via technology. There was a time in our past when we were forced to look people in the face or talk to people on the phone. And I don't know what the effect will be. I'm not a sociologist, but when those sociology reports come out, I'm going to want to know, what are we finding that we're doing to ourselves, to our children, and to the world by losing that face time, that together time, that running outside and playing in the dirt time.
I read one study recently on one of my plane rides this holiday season that said 53% of children would rather lose their sense of taste than lose access to some technological devices.
And I use them, but I was fortunate enough to grow up in a time where if I had a crush on a girl, I had to call her on the phone, and I wasn't allowed to be on the phone very long, so she was allowed to come to my house with supervision, or I was allowed to go to her house. It was very, 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 very interactive FaceTime.
Now, how do you get that across? Because we have to keep in mind as parents and as older people that these kids don't know of a time where there were rocking chairs and mint juleps and turkeys on the dinner table and, you know, pass the peas. They didn't grow up in that. They have no frame of reference for it. So how do you instill that, Dr. Bruce Lee?
You're asking a good question, and I'm delighted to answer that. Think of it as competition. We as parents, we as people, compete with all of those technologies and all of the available electronic resources. We compete for people's attention. When we make ourselves interesting, attractive, et cetera, to people, including our kids, they want to spend the time talking to us. If my daughter was on the computer or on her cell phone back in the day when she was a child and at home, I knew I wasn't going to legislate, you can't be on that. It had to be, hey, I want to tell you something. And it better be interesting, because if I was going to tell her something that wasn't interesting, you know, her eyes would glaze over and she'd be back on the computer in a minute. So it's important for people, adults in this context, to think about what's important to their kids and to find an entryway into that topic or that conversation without being judgmental, and to show you really care so that technology isn't as interesting in a moment. You know, it's maybe mom or dad is, or uncle or grandpa or grandma.
We're going to go to Corey, who's in KCK. Corey, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. I have a daughter who's turning 5 in a couple of weeks, and she is not going to start kindergarten until the fall because of her age. And she's bored in preschool, and I have realized that also she has a baby sibling, too. But I'm wondering about what her brain development is right now, like what is changing in her brain and what's going on, and because I've definitely found that in the last, I'd say 2 months or something, I've really had to stay on my toes and change my own game with regards to discipline and rewards and consequences and things like that as she becomes more sophisticated.
So what are you asking us, Corey?
About is what changes are happening in her brain, and how can I keep her really engaged and excited about learning in this next, what do we have, 10 months until kindergarten.
Focus is what you're talking about. Go ahead, Dr.
Exactly.
Bruce Lee.
Thank you so much for that question. Let me just... Uh-oh.
Well, uh-oh. No, you can answer it.
You still there, Corey? Okay.
No,
I won't
there.
Answer.
You go ahead, do it.
Great. Prior to 18 months of age, childhood development's primarily sensory motor, coordination, kind of means, ends, behaviors. They imitate, so it's very mechanical. Your daughter at 5 years old has the ability to represent objects, car, block, doll, house, tree, with symbols. And those symbols that are important are words. So language development is very, very, very important. And one of the most important things you can do with a child at your child's age is to read to them and to talk to them, and even more important, ask them questions. What do you think about that? What happened today? How did you feel about that? Give them a chance to use the language they're developing to sort through challenges and complex processes. So that's up until around 7 years old, and that, it's not a coincidence that kids start first grade around 7 years old. That's considered – middle childhood is considered between 7 and 11 years old, and that's where they begin to develop abstraction skills. And that's when they can do things like math. But at 5 years old and in early childhood development, you want to work with them on their language skills and sorting through problems and questions by getting them to talk about what they think about this or that or anything.
So you're saying, Dr. Lees, separating the word from the thing or finding meaning in the symbols.
Yeah, and there was a move back in the 60s called deliberate psychological education. And back in the day, it was thought that an intentional teaching about feelings would be a good thing. And that kind of faded. But now, with all the literature out there on emotional intelligence, it's again apparent. It's apparent to us in my field and apparent to, I think, just the general public that it's important for us humans to learn about our emotions. So asking your son or daughter at those ages, at all ages, what do you think about that? What did you think about what you just saw on TV? Or you just frowned? Or you're not eating. How do you feel? Not in a way that will spoil them, because if they say, I don't want to eat, the next thing you do isn't to say, well, that's okay, honey, anything you want. But cognitively, get her to talk, read to her. Reading's going to begin here any minute now at those ages. And emotional development.
Emotional development. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Dr. Bruce Lees, professor of family medicine at KU, who is here to talk about parenting tools you can use and what we can learn from our parents and our parents and our parents' parents. And we'd like you to call in and talk about parenting. We're going to entertain your questions about parenting today. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can hit us at centralstandard@kcur.org, Facebook, or at KCURCST. That's our Twitter handle. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. John Wilmot, the English Earl of Rochester, once said, "Before I got married, I had 6 theories about bringing up children. Now I have 6 children and no theories." Parenting is our subject today on Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Dr. Bruce Lees, professor of family medicine at KU, is here to help us turn theory into practice when it comes to parenting. Kansas City, we're taking your questions about parenting today and asking you, what's the best and worst thing about being a parent? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can hit us off at centralstandard@kcur.org, Facebook, or at KCURCST. That's our Twitter handle. I got to get that down. Our Twitter handle. Twitter handle. Dr. Lees, what advice do you have for new parents who go into the parenting experience with all types of theories and all types of research and all types of tools that will be useful when they apply them, but that they will not be able to know how to apply them until they actually are changing those diapers?
Well, I think what parents don't anticipate when they're new parents, what they don't anticipate is the emotional impact of the child's needs, the child's wants, the child's midnight awakenings. So there's a lot of potential emotion associated with parenting that people don't anticipate. Getting those emotions under control as the parent is one of the most important initial tasks, so that when the infant wakes up in the middle of the night and you're exhausted, be prepared to not be happy. The question that makes me chuckle every time I hear it is, oh, what's it like being a new parent, when a new parent is asked that? And the honest ones will say, it's a little overwhelming at times. The less honest ones will say, oh, it's wonderful. It's always just a joy. Because it's not. It's hard work.
But talk about that. That less honest one, it could lead to a little bit of resentment down the road if they're not being honest about how it's affecting them. How does that work in a family medicine perspective, Dr. Bruce Lees?
Well, if somebody said to me that parenting a newborn, an infant, is nothing but wonderful, I'd have to ask more. I'd have to know. There's a good chance you're talking to the parent that isn't the caregiver.
Right. Or that's in maybe denial about.
Or in denial. Yeah, I mean, children go from the womb to this cold, literally cold world, and they, you know, they're not comfortable, and they have lots of needs. And that happens throughout their lives, and their parents have to figure out what they're going to do with their kids' emotions so that they don't rub off on the parent.
And they will let you know they're not comfortable in very immediate and very sure and very clear ways, the crying, the throwing things and stuff like that. So talk about good parenting and learning good parenting from a developmental perspective.
Good parenting, from any perspective, requires that balance I will continue to talk about between affection and nurturing on one hand and rules and order and structure and boundaries on the other hand. You did ask about a developmental perspective. So I think that's a legitimate question. A preteen will really start to sound like they know stuff. And parents overestimate how wise a preteen is. A teenager will overestimate how much they know. And they will reassure a parent, you know, I can go out and drive and come back without a curfew. Let me come back whenever I want. I'm safe. I'm good. So from a developmental perspective, parents should know what their kids are and are not capable of. What they don't need, what children don't need, even adult children, they don't need anger. They don't need from their parents. They don't need raised voices. Kids do not need physical punishment. They don't need it. There are people who deliver it, but it's usually when all else fails. They don't need to be criticized, belittled, demeaned. And the list is so long. There's a lot of things they don't need.
We're going to go to Jeffrey in Overland Park. Jeffrey, welcome to Central Standard. Jeffrey, you're not there. We're going to go to Allison in KC.
Hi. Do you hear me?
Yes, we do.
I have a question about parenting or what I'm listening. And I have a child that's on the autism spectrum. And I guess for me, in this process of being a parent and being a parent with special needs, you just lose yourself. I mean, I can't work now because I have therapies for him. I'm always looking and researching. Everything I read is about what he needs. I question if I'm doing the right thing, if this is what I should be doing. And then I also have other children, too. And even when I'm happy, it's always in the back of my mind, am I giving him everything that he needs, and is this going to work? And I'll take your comments off the air.
Wait, don't go yet.
Don't go yet, Allison.
Okay.
He wants to talk directly to you, and I think that'll be beneficial.
Yeah, I think that'll be very, very helpful. My big question before you hung up was, have you looked into any support groups?
You know, I have done support groups, but when you 4 nights a week, I take them to therapies. I am running around. Actually, right now, I'm going to a doctor's appointment for him, and I don't have any time to be at home. A support group is one more night away from the rest of
the
family.
It. Okay, I respect that. Allison, I learned when I was around 12, and I entered into a lifeguard course. I learned that unless you're a strong swimmer and can keep your head about you, it's dangerous to try to rescue a drowning person. I'm not thinking that your child is a drowning person, but to put it very simply, it is very important that someone with the demands you have on you take really, really, really good care of yourself. It's a very simple phenomenon. If you aren't nurturing yourself and getting those around you, care about you, to nurture you. You're not going to be a strong enough swimmer to take care of all of the responsibilities you have. So it's easy to get lost in trying to fix and help your children when they have needs. It's easy to get lost in that. Don't get lost in it. Do take good care of yourself. Don't quit doing the things that make you feel good. Fit them in somehow.
Does that make sense to you, Allison?
It does, but I think it's easier said than done.
Everything that matters in life is easier said than done. Everything, everything there is in life that matters is easier said than done. Yeah. So I still advise you to do them, even if it's one or two things. It will make a difference in who you are for your kids.
Thank you, Allison, for your thoughts. Dr. Bruce Lee's Allison's case brings up a very interesting point. Learning when to say no, learning when to step back and actually take care of yourself so you'll have the energy and the consciousness and the wherewithal and the fortitude to handle a big responsibility of parenting. Talk about that.
Oh, I wrote the word boundaries down. I know that one of the most difficult things about parenting is knowing where to draw the boundaries. What's a boundary? It's knowing that you are right and not allowing others, and in this case, the child, to change your thinking about that when you've given it proper thought. So when you observe boundaries and you're willing to say, no, I need to take care of myself right now, when you're willing to say, I need to take care of myself, or no, you can't have the car, you got a speeding ticket, and that was the rule, knowing how to draw the boundaries and say, I know I'm right about that. I know you shouldn't drive for a period of time. That makes all the difference in the world. If you have fuzzy boundaries as a person, it's going to be really hard to be a good parent. And in fact, when we see people at at our clinic that have parenting problems, it's not uncommon for us to see those same people as the ones who allow people to manipulate them, or they have similar problems with people their own age. So,
like, for instance, Allison, she has stated on live air that she can't work because she's so busy going around all these appointments, trying to take care of her son. Autism requires a lot of care. Developmental problems require a lot of care. Kids require a lot of care even with no developmental problems. But talk about that balance.
Yeah, I do appreciate Allison saying the self-help groups or the help groups don't work for me because they don't work for everybody. I understand that she was talking about a time issue, but I do want to reiterate that I respect that thought. If you don't take, I'm just going to repeat what I said earlier because I think it's so important. If you don't take care of yourself, you are not going to be strong and as capable of taking care of your kids. And figuring out what that balance is quite the challenge and worth your attention. And another thing I was going to say is that if somebody has those kinds of demands as a parent, the wise thing to do is to turn to others and say, help me. Say it to your parents if they are alive and around and capable. Say it to your friends, please help me. Say it to your significant other, please help me. Saying please help me is an awesomely good thing to do when it allows you to be a stronger person so that you can take good care of your kids. Please help me. And if you don't have the family, if you don't have the friends, you know, go to your family doctor. And I am not a family doctor, by the way. I do have a family medicine perspective because I've been teaching at KU Family Med for 28 years. I'm a psychologist, but I have learned a lot from watching my colleagues who are physicians who see these problems every day.
Dr. Bruce Lee, as he just mentioned, is a professor of family medicine at KU, and he's here to help us as parents and potential parents turn theory into practice. This is Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Kansas City, we're taking your questions about parenting today and asking you, what's the best and worst thing about being a parent? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Also, Central Standard at KCUR.org is our email, Facebook, or at KCURCST on Twitter. We're going to go to JR in Midtown. JR, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. I had a very pleasant surprise, one that was totally unexpected, in the realm of responsibility and ethical behavior. Have two sons, both are in their mid-20s. And the younger one surprised me greatly recently when he made a statement that was extremely ethical about some behavior that he was encountering. And, you know, I did not expect such a mature response from him at this point in his life.
What was it, JR? What made your son so ethical? What was it?
I don't really remember. That's the strange thing about it. The thing that I remember is how surprised and how pleased I was that he was doing the right thing. Now, we brought both guys up so that they understood what the right thing was, and we tried to model it and demonstrate it. We set those boundaries you just talked about. And for the most part, we got two wonderful guys. And, you know, for the younger one just to come, you know, let a little bit up, spit it right out as a very cogent, well ethically reasoned thing. And I wish I could remember all the details, but, you know, most of what I remember is the surprise, how pleased I was.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, JR. Dr. Bruce Lease, you want to expound on that?
Sure.
Surprised that his son was actually ethical. Surprised.
No, you asked me at the beginning the best thing and worst thing about parenting. I completely agree with JR. Having a daughter in her 20s, there are lots of things that come out of her mouth that I couldn't quite quote because there's no reason to quote them. But I remember after the conversation thinking, wow, she's really grown up. She's really an adult. So the quote isn't as important as your acknowledgement. And I'm sure you acknowledge that your son had said something that really impressed you. But it's amazing. It's a cool thing when it happens. I can relate to it completely. The fact that you would call your public radio station and talk proudly about your son helps me understand why he would become an ethical person.
Certainly. Rick in KC, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. In today's times, there's a lot of blended families or people that are divorced. And how do you handle a situation, or what do you recommend when kids are brought up with a different set of boundaries, if you will, than if you had been the actual, feel like you'd been the actual father and maybe imposed some boundaries, if you will, that could be applied. You can have an opinion, but you don't get a vote.
because I like your question so much.
And I understand it's pretty.
No. I'm going to ask you to. I'm going to help you.
Yes, sir.
Pare down your question because I'm guessing that most families in this country are blended families based on the statistics on divorce. So your question would be good for a lot of people who are probably listening.
Sure.
What in particular, can you give me an example of something that happened or even a close resemblance to something that happened that's difficult about being a parent in a blended family situation?
Yes. Let's say, for example, it's 2 a.m, as it was this last Saturday night, and the chime goes off from the cell phone, and the son he's out, and he's sending mom a question that's really something that probably could have waited. You know, and in those situations when you're dating somebody and or if you're involved in a relationship, you know, you want to protect your wife or your significant other, if you will, and you want her to be treated with respect. And when you see those boundaries, for example, her being woke up at 2 a.m. because her cell phone goes off, it's just kind
of
challenging.
Good question. Good.
Yes, sir.
Let me see how many different spinoffs I can take on this. Number one, if you are a step-parent if you're the step-parent and your significant other is struggling with their kid, the best thing to do is to be a good friend and a good listener, not pass judgment, and only give your opinion when you know it's desired. So
okay.
That's a situation where you're a step-parent and you care deeply about a biological parent. Be careful and don't watch your own emotions and don't tread on their parenting, even if their kid is out of control, which happens more times than I'm sure any of us could count. So just stay focused on how you relate to your partner with less emotional investment in how their kid relates to him. But there's a couple of other things that I will say about blended families that don't so much apply to you, at least to my knowledge. No matter how awful a marriage was that results in divorce, whether a kid's involved, figure out a way to be collaborative with your, for lack of a better term, with your ex. If you're a parent and you're getting divorced, or your parent is and your ex is divorcing you, you've got to figure out a way to be collaborative. You've got to do that. So I would say that's number one. And getting back to the step-parenting thing, make sure you're collaborative with the person that you're with as a step-parent. So
what if you're in a situation where you're not the step-parent, but yet you're involved in a relationship and as a significant other, and this is kind of keeping you from moving forward, because
dating someone with a child is what
Bill's
talking
about. Yes, sir. Okay.
All right.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you very much, Rick. Can you expound on that, Dr. Rubislis?
Yes. Too many people fall in love with somebody and ignore how complex step-parenting will be. So while you're dating, you and your datee, the person you're with, really need to decide if you can be on the same page as to what roles you each want to take in raising or being involved in this kid's life. Don't get married until you know that you can tolerate a stepchild's behaviors. If you can't, the relationship could be disastrous.
Certainly. Certainly, certainly, certainly. We're on with Dr. Bruce Lease. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're taking questions, 816-235-2888. Parenting is the subject. Today, we have Michael from Overland Park. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just, I got two girls, 15 and 12, and they're, embarking on the teenage years. And I got to say, my approach, I have no clue right or wrong. I just kind of do what my gut says, and it's all honesty. All the time I call them on everything. I've never talked to them in baby talk kind of stuff when they were tiny. I just have always been very adult with them. And I kind of use the approach thinking that I tell them how bad it's going to be, their teenage years. I just tell them it's going to be awful. We're going, all these kind of odd things that you would say how bad it's going to be. And thinking that maybe it won't quite reach that level. And anything short of that, I win. And it seems odd, I know. But kind of complete honesty with them and catch them with everything, talk to them about everything, tell them that they can tell me anything, anytime, any time of day. You hate me, you love me today, you're mad at me, you whatever, all those kind of things.
What do you think, Dr. Bruce Lease, of Michael's total honesty policy? Total honesty?
There were so many things that Michael said. Thank you for your comments. The thing that stands out the most, that concerns me the most, is telling a kid that the future will be bad. I recommend that statements be objective and that they be based on more than just opinion. So raising a daughter, I would say to my daughter, boys, it'll be a challenge as you start to date. It will be a challenge. A lot of things will happen. If she looked interested and said, like what, Dad? I might say, well, I know you're going to have to make decisions about your body. So I know objectively that that's something that's going to happen. I wouldn't predict that that would be bad. If she had questions like, what do I do then I'd be so delighted and happy to answer them. But pessimism about how bad things could be is likely to create kids who are anxious and maybe overly cautious. Idealizing the world and saying everything's rosy and wonderful and rainbows and sunshine, that also can be equally destructive in the opposite direction. I would just stick to very objective. Kids have a lot of respect for parents. This is something I think you will value, Michael. And
well,
I just want to really emphasize this. when you tell your kid something will happen, this, Michael, this is for everyone listening. When you tell your kid that something will happen in the future, if it doesn't happen, you lose your credibility. If you say boys will be harsh, if you say, you know, the weather is going to be terrible, if you say everyone's going to think those shoes are ugly, if you make predictions about the future and they don't come true, your child will learn to not trust you. But that's for everyone, not just you, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Michael, for your question. We actually have to move on from that. Do you tell your child the whole truth and nothing but the truth? Is it the old Jack Nicholson thing? Can they handle the truth?
I have to tell this story. When my daughter was just in elementary school, we were sitting at a lunch counter. She and I had, you know, we went out for lunch. And she was in elementary in school, and she looked at me and she said, "Dad, how do gay people have sex?"
Wow.
Yeah, wow. That told me that she cares enough about my opinion to ask me questions like that. But I started out by asking her, well, what do you think? What do you know? So I don't advocate telling the child the whole truth. I advocate figuring out where they are developmentally, what they can understand, and what they can integrate into their understanding of life. And that's the amount you tell them. But you got to ask them questions first. What do you think? How much do you know? Where did you learn that? What else do you think? And they will ask you specific questions.
Parenting is indeed a challenge. No recipe. We've been talking about it with Dr. Bruce Leese, professor of family medicine, who was here to talk about parenting, truth or consequences, and all the wonderful bells and whistles that come with being a parent. Dr. Leese, thank you for joining us once again.
I always enjoy being here. Thank you so much for inviting me back this time.
And tune in tomorrow as we explore what's in a name. What does your name say about who you are? And we're still looking for more guests for that show, What's in a Name? Kansas City, do you know someone with a unique name? Maybe James Bond or maybe Michael Jackson? If so, we'd love an introduction. 816-235-2888 or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We had help today from Tamika Weatherspoon. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Up to Date is next with a look at how to empower employees to make more money for the company, that is. I'm Jabalani LaFault, and this is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.